Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I am the Die of Mischief.
And we are here to talk about all of your genre film needs. Because, yes, you need genre film.
I don't know why that's funny to me.
Apparently that was funny to you. Thank you very much. It made me feel very good about myself. So, way to go. Okay. Let's start off this week, our first week back from the Dive Mistress's journey of self-discovery.
Part two. Yes.
The re-journeying. To be fair, in my defense, like, this journey of self-discovery, I was widely chastised for describing your last journey as a journey of self-discovery. But this journey was far more a journey of self-discovery than the previous journey.
That's true. And I do want to issue an apology to all our viewer for this the delay in getting the show going again. Because something happened in my personal life that I'm not going to get into that kind of prompted me to take my journey of self-discovery, compounded with the fact that I needed to be in Toronto to attend a wedding.
And I was specifically requested not to record another AVOD on my own.
Yeah, so it is entirely my fault that we have missed out on a week of movies and TV. So we're playing catch up this week.
And what a thing we have to catch up on.
Yes.
Because a little show ended this past week, but we'll get to that in a minute. For right now, let's start with what you've been watching in the movie theaters lately. Okay, and by that, I don't mean movies. I want to make that clear. I am not talking about movies.
We're talking about movie trailers.
We are.
And to be perfectly honest, I actually saw the trailer online.
Dang.
Not a trailer I saw in the movie theaters these past couple weeks. And this might, in fact, be old news. Again, I've been a little out of touch recently. But I watched a trailer for Martin Scorsese's new movie called Shutter Island. And it is genre-tastic.
Okay.
Watching the trailer, I didn't think it was a really fantastic movie trailer, as movie trailers go. It revealed a bit too much, and it made the movie seem kind of stupid. But everything Martin Scorsese touches turns to gold. So I'm going to hold back criticism.
Well, he was on Entourage last year, and that did not make Entourage good.
I'm not saying his presence.
Oh, okay. Him as a director.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's about Leonardo DiCaprio.
Surprise, surprise.
Goes to this island on which is a mental institution for, like, you know, the criminally insane, and no other institution will take these people.
Nice.
And a woman has escaped from the institution, and she's still got to be on the island, because if she got off the island, she surely would have died in the treacherous waters. It's kind of like the Alcatraz
of women's mental hospitals.
No, it's co-ed.
Oh.
Men and women, yes.
Okay.
And so I guess he's there to figure out what happened to this woman. So from the trailer, it looks like he then becomes an inmate, I guess, to talk to the other people in there.
Ooh.
Maybe patient is a better word than inmate.
Undercover inmate sounds
Undercover
good.
Inmate / patient to unravel this mystery, because there's this sort of there's maybe some kind of ghost or mysterious 67th patient, even though there are only 66 patients in the asylum. And it looks like it might be some kind of drug testing going on. But yeah, looks like it's billed as some kind of thriller suspense type thing. It looked good. It did look good.
Okay, so, well, I gotta say, I'm excited.
Something to look forward to.
And there is
he's not really a horror person. I mean, he made Cape Fear, right?
Yeah.
but all the other stuff is, you know,
not genre-y kind of, at all.
It's not genre-y, yeah.
I gotta say, I'm very excited about the prospect of this. I think it's going to be very interesting. But, and I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, I'm worried that it might turn out to just be a straight, you know, might get too far from the thriller aspects to really count as genre. I haven't seen the trailer. I can't say. But I'm interested to see where it goes. Because like you, I'm a fan of Martin Scorsese. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, yes. Good for you.
Scorsese. Okay, there we go.
The first time you said it properly today.
Thank you. The question I have, and I know this is a weird question to have, but bear with me, is has always been, do you think it makes Robert De Niro feel bad that, you know, now Leonardo DiCaprio has just taken over for him in Martin Scorsese's affections?
I don't think so. I imagine Robert De Niro is a pretty classy guy, so I think that he'd be pleased or happy to sort of hand over the reins to somebody new.
To weedy, effeminate, Nancy boy Leonardo DiCaprio.
Not anymore. He's grown up. He's a man now.
Okay. I try to imagine
them. You haven't seen the Departed, have you?
No.
Oh, man.
I guess I try to imagine them on the set of This Boy's Life and wonder if, like, it ever occurred to Robert De Niro that this kid was going to replace him.
Well, nobody knew that it was going to happen.
I know. I'm just wondering, did it ever even occur to him? Did he think, you know, this kid's pretty talented. I wonder what the future holds for him. Well, he's going to become you. And all the parts you got as a young man, instead of people going out of their way to write the kind of parts that you would play now as an old man, they're just going to keep writing the kind of parts you would play as a young man, and they're going to get him. That's what's going to happen. To the point where Martin Scorsese is even going to make a movie that he wanted to make with you back in the 70s with this kid instead. So take that, Robert De Niro.
I'm having major deja vu right now.
You've had this conversation before?
We totally had this conversation before.
Okay.
I don't remember what I say next.
Was it? Oh, I'm sorry. Was it on an AVOD or are we good?
No, we're good. It's okay.
Okay. You kind of scared me there a little. I'm going to be honest, but.
Oh, that was weird. Wow.
Okay.
I've been having serious deja vu recently. I don't know what's going on.
Well, obviously reality is crumbling around you. Duh.
Of course. I do live half my life in a fantasy world of my own creation.
That would explain it.
Yeah.
So I, too, watched a trailer recently. And it was not as interesting a trailer as you watched, let's just say. It was the trailer for the movie G-Force.
We've all seen that trailer.
I'm sure we have. That's why it's appropriate to discuss. But the thing that gets me about the trailer for the movie G-Force is, A, I'm kind of offended that they called the movie G-Force. Because...
I mean, started on that.
In the year that this movie was being announced, I thought there was a G-Force movie coming out.
Me too! I got really excited!
And then, like... The trailer for the new G-Force movie coming soon. And it's like, normally, you know, I don't watch trailers or find out anything about upcoming movies because I want to be surprised. But I'm like, a G-Force movie, that one I'll check out to see how they did it. And then it's like, the hell is this?
You want to hear something even worse?
I do, always.
Watching TV on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what movie was playing. But during the commercial breaks, they had, you know, sort of these brief interviews with Jerry Bruckheimer because he was promoting G-Force.
Ew.
And it's like, you know, stay tuned for scenes from G-Force after the commercial, blah, blah, blah. So Bruckheimer's there and he's talking about his movie and it says G-Force. And like, it took me, I think, 2 go-rounds to finally clue in that the movie G-Force he's talking about is not the movie G-Force I'm thinking of in my head.
But rather the thing with gerbils they're showing after he finishes talking.
Yes. I'm like, what is this shit? This isn't race cars in space. Fucking guinea pigs working for the CIA. Yeah, I'm a little slow.
Oh, no.
Especially slow that day.
Oh, that's so sad.
G-Force.
Oh my god, G-Force. But anyway, the thing that got me about it is, and maybe I'm over, hey, if I'm the one overreacting, let me know. I found the ad unbelievably offensively racist.
Really?
And I'm going to tell you why I found it unbelievably offensively racist. Because the black gerbil is voiced by Tracy Morgan, doing a full-on Tracy Morgan.
Why is that racist?
Because it's saying that the black gerbil would have to be a black guy.
Right.
I'm like, why not have Tracy Morgan be one of the gerbils, essentially, you know, Tracy Morganing it up, but make him like a tan gerbil or a white gerbil. You know, play with our expectations. Don't say that the color of your fur is deterministic of your behavior.
Well, I think that if you got the black guy to voice a gerbil that was not black,
yeah,
and a white guy to voice a gerbil that is black, someone might then find that to be offensive.
Yes, but gerbils aren't from Africa. They didn't suffer slavery. They're not, you know, they do not have competitive, you know, sort of comparative life experiences to black people. You know, like, assuming that black people have to have the equivalent, you know, stereotypical behaviors of the color of humans they most resemble, I find deeply offensive.
Okay.
And I think...
I didn't really think about it.
I don't think it's so offensive for the humans. I think it's offensive for the gerbils.
Well, here... Okay, on that line...
Please.
I saw a trailer for Disney's... Well, I was going to call it the Frog Prince, but they've called it the Princess and the Frog.
Yeah, I don't know why they call it the Frog Prince.
Has a French accent.
Seriously?
I'm like, that's a little offensive.
But I thought it took place in New Orleans.
Well, he's a frog, and frog is derogatory for French.
Oh my
God. A French guy, or it's not a French guy, but the frog then has a French accent.
That's horrible.
Yes. I made a point of pointing that out to my friends very loudly in the movie theater, so people kind of could hear. And
I know they appreciated it. I like that you thought it was important that other people heard that.
It's always important that other people hear what I have to say.
Your angry comments about popular culture. God, that is pretty offensive. And I'm sorry, the fact that the whole advertising campaign for that movie is built around, look, we finally got a black princess, is pretty offensive to me, too. It's like, there have been thousands, you know, we have been a part of your, you know, your entertainment for generations. And finally, we admit the existence of black people.
Oh,
like, come on, what are you doing? Like, don't make a big deal out of it. Just be classy. God, it's not like you, when they made Mulan, they went on and on about how groundbreaking it was that there was an Asian in a Disney movie. Like, them making a big deal out of
Aladdin, I mean, that's, you know.
And they didn't make a big deal about it in Aladdin either. But suddenly, it's a marketing hook. You know, it's essentially that they think of it, not because they came up with a story. Not, okay, for example, Mulan, apparently based on a thing that actually happened. Okay? And Aladdin, well, we all know the story of Aladdin. So you needed Chinese people and you needed Arabian people. But it's like this time, you could send the Frog Prince anywhere at any time. So deciding to set it in, and I don't understand how she's a princess if it's New Orleans in the 20s, but let's move on. Setting it in New Orleans in the 20s, like, it's you're going out of the way to create the Black Frog Prince. See what I'm saying?
Right. No,
and
I understand.
That, I find that kind of offensive because it's this kind of tokenism. Am I saying that they should have gone to Africa and found a fairy tale or folktale from there? No, I'm not saying they had to go that far. I'm just saying by making a big deal out of it in their advertising, it makes it look like offensive tokenism and bone throwing more than it would have had they just made the movie and not talked about it. had they not been so goddamn, like, self-aggrandizingly patting themselves on the back for being so progressive, it would be less sickening to me. Is that clear enough?
Wow, I had already felt so strongly about Disney.
Disney in general, the Frog Princess, the Princess and the Frog.
I should have liked Disney.
I know. I do not have a good excuse for this kind of behavior. Seriously, though, it's deeply offensive. Anyway.
We'll come back
We can come back to that later.
Offensive portrayal in movies. It's
very, very soon. But first, considering that through my infernal machinations, this podcast was essentially turned into a Harper's Island-themed podcast for 4 months, I guess it only makes sense to wrap things up now that the show is over.
Yes. And, yes. Harper's Island is finished.
Like, I thought, and you thought it was excessive when I'm like, no, we're a Jason-themed podcast for the month leading up to the Jason movie. You thought that was bad. Oh my god.
Yeah.
But Harper's Island is over. After this week, we never have to talk about Harper's Island again. Although we might accidentally by talking about I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
To talk about that
next. No, I'm saying if I know, still know what you did last summer comes up, I might bring up Harper's Island because of all the movies to rip off, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, really?
Hey, nope to self. Don't bring up I Still Know What You Did Last.
So Harper's Island is over. It had as stupid an ending as you could imagine. And the character who was the most obvious suspect, so obvious that we dismissed him right at the beginning because he was too obvious, was in fact the killer.
It still doesn't make any
sense. I know! Oh god, did it not make any sense. Like
what a crazy roundabout way to get to exact some kind of preposterous revenge on people who have never wished you any ill will. Like,
it's like when they tried to say that it was John Wakefield's revenge, you want to help me get my revenge, don't you, son? And I'm like, how is this your revenge? How? In what way can what you're be doing here be described as your revenge? How? Like, it made no sense.
I don't.
Sorry.
But here, okay, let's...
Let's recap this.
Brief recap. So it turns out Henry is, in fact, Wakefield's son. I was in the wrong. I think he might have been somebody else. Not really important anymore. Henry is Wakefield's son. And Wakefield recruited him, tracked him down and recruited him to help him get vengeance... Depend upon, I don't even know what word to use, the sheriff and everyone on Harper's Island.
Although not everyone on Harper's Island, because just the members of the wedding party, none of whom lived on Harper's Island.
Anyway, so Henry and Wakefield have been working together all of these years, I guess coming up with this dastardly plan to murder everybody that Wakefield ever had a problem with or came in contact with. Meanwhile, Henry's got his own plan going behind the scenes because Henry, turns out, is in fact in love with Abby, which is something I thought of in the very first episode but never mentioned because I thought it sounded too stupid. And so it is revealed that Henry is the one helping out Wakefield, and he murders Trish and confesses his love for Abby, and Wakefield wants Henry to kill Abby, but he kills Wakefield instead. And then tells Abby that he's fixed it so that everybody thinks that they're dead and they can live together forever in peace and happiness. But he's also got Jimmy tied up in the shed because he's going to frame Jimmy for everything. and, you know, doesn't really work out that way. Henry ends up dying, and Jimmy saves the day, and Abby and Jimmy, you know, sort of ride off into the sunset on a boat.
Yeah. By the end, I was, honestly, by the end, I was just hoping that Henry would get away with it, because I had so much contempt for the ending they had come up with.
I just didn't understand why. Okay, first of all, like, Henry explains, he's like, when I saw Wakefield when he was on his killing spree 7 years ago, there was this connection and I knew who he was.
Yeah.
Even though Henry didn't know that he's adopted. Right. So then apparently he's got all this suppressed rage inside of him that Wakefield brings out. So Henry kind of turns on the world, and he hates everyone because they're all liars.
And I like that the big thing that traumatized him apparently was finding out that he was adopted. That because that'll drive you to murder. Finding out.
Because, I mean, he was raised in a loving home. He had a wonderful life as far as we can tell. Unless he's Michael Myers and a complete psychopath. There really isn't any, there's no way to explain his actions and behavior after meeting Wake.
No, there really is, like.
Unless the show is you know, creating a musing on nature.
Yeah, unless they're saying you can be born a serial killer, which is kind of ridiculous.
So, which sort of leads into the next thing. I don't understand why Henry needs to court Trish.
I know!
Force her to have a wedding on an island so he can murder all of his friends. If you're in love with Abby.
You know, you have this 8-year period where you could just go ask her out.
And if Wake keeps using you to get back to the island to murder people there, then you just suggest to Abby that you go back to the island, even if, like, you don't think the courtship's going to work out. You could bring her back to the island as a way of getting over the past and moving forward with your lives together, either as a couple or as friends. And this will be therapeutic for both of you. Then, once she's there, you could start killing people.
But the biggest problem was...
It's just so unnecessary.
Nothing Henry has done for the past 7 years makes any sense at all with that ending. Like, nothing!
No.
Like, what? And as you said, why not just ask Trish out? You know? Trish. Why not just ask Abby out? You can. No one knows you're related. Your parents, the people who apparently the only people on Earth... Your parents... And her mother, apparently the only people on Earth who knew you were related, are dead. So, you know, what's the problem? Yeah.
I mean, okay, granted, he was really good at sort of turning evil.
I loved that actor's crazy acting.
Like, he was good at that.
Oh, yeah, it was very entertaining crazy acting, don't get me wrong. So much better than the dad from Gossip Girl playing that same part in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Thanks for ruining the movie.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to recognize. Hey, do you watch Gossip Girl? So there you go.
But now I know who the crazy person
is. It's pretty obvious. Don't worry. I haven't spoiled the amazing Agatha Christie-esque twist ending of I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
So it just, like, you know, they ended, they found it, they wrote themselves an ending, but the stupidest possible ending imaginable.
I know. Endly satisfying. Oh, my God. And can I just...
But I still don't understand. It just doesn't answer the question, though, of who killed who, because...
I know.
Henry couldn't have murdered all the people he claimed to
have killed.
I love
that he only name checks killing 3 people. And 2 of them he could not possibly have killed. Like, what were they thinking? Were they keeping track of their own show this badly? Because he full-on says, yes, I murdered Reverend Fain. No, you were having sex with Trish when he was murdered. I killed, I killed Richard, which he could have done. And then I killed, Catherine. And I'm like, no, She was alive when you all went down into the tunnels, and Jimmy was never more than 5 feet away from you until you walked out the front door. You know, like...
So, but to have killed Catherine, yeah, he would have had to have crawled in, like, slithered into the room on his belly, shears in hand, gone around behind the couch she was sitting on, and then stabbed her while lying on the floor.
I know. No, but more to the point, he was outside when the body was found, and she had recently been stabbed, but more to the point, he's walking out with a group of people. Like, a group of people see Trish and Abby and everybody driving up, and then he and that group of people all walk out to meet them. And then we see outside that group of people all walking out to meet them. I'm like, so you expect us to believe he ran off from that group, stabbed her, then ran back with that group?
No one would have noticed that.
Oh yeah. My god. No, he, like, it's insane that the two murders they give him, he couldn't possibly have done. Oh, and to say that Uncle Marty was, like, there was nothing at all shady about the money?
Yeah, he just brought the money so he could buy Fat Frat.
I know, and I'm like, Fat Frat?
Then why did he bring a gun?
Why did he bring a gun? Why did he bring a gun? And why did he bring the money in cash? Like, bringing the money in cash is ridiculously, like, well, he brought the gun to protect his, you know, briefcase full of money. You know, if you had just written a cashier's check to that guy, you wouldn't have needed a gun. Like, what?
I guess Marty likes dealing cash.
Oh my god, what a stupid, stupid, stupid ending. Yeah, so I did not love the ending of this movie. Sorry, TV show. And I just want to point out that, seriously, I guess I should have noticed that they were ripping off I Know What You Did Last Summer when they had a fishing-themed villain, which is what that movie had. But that point for point that, like, there's this, you know, girl, and there had been a, you know, a tragedy earlier, and she felt all guilty about it, and then she had her hunky boyfriend that she'd run out on, who was a local fisherman, who ends up really looking like he's the killer, but then it turns out that the killer, you know, is a fisherman who secretly had not died and has now come back for revenge, you know? And then it turns out that his secret son is her good friend, hunky guy number two. Like, all of this is point for point. And then one of the, and they flipped it, but either the father or the son, you know, stabs the other one during the climactic showdown. You know, like, point for point, it is, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, and I Know What You Did Last Summer. And I just think that that's a really messed up thing to want to rip off if you're making a horror movie. sorry, a horror TV show. Yeah.
So I'm glad it's over. And the best part of the whole show is the video clip at the very end.
I know, it really was. It was classy.
Like, that was really good. That was well done. And if they sort of made the show with that bearing that in mind, then it could have been something really great if you know,
had a modicum of class.
So, like, when I say the best thing about this show was the ending, I mean that literally, because that's the very last thing you see before end credits are this video clips shot on the first day. And that was really good.
Why was Cousin Ben killed beforehand and tied to a boat?
We'll never know. It's a mystery to the ages.
I hate you now, Harper's Island. Why did you have to be so stupid? Oh my god.
Another one.
So.
But also, in tandem with Harper's Island is the end of Harper's
Which managed to be, and I'll give it this, even stupider than the ending of Harper's Island. And that wasn't easy.
So, Robin, she's attacked in the woods. We're not really sure what happened there, but she runs away.
From John Wakefield.
Runs back from John Wakefield, runs back to her office. And watches video of her and the car wreck. And it's him, it's Wakefield. So I don't know why. has the video camera now. He went into, he took the camera from the car and is filming her as she, I guess, skulks about in the woods and freaks out a little after the car accident. Yeah. There's gasoline sort of dripping out of the car, and he lights it on fire, and the car blows up, and then films her reaction. And then, he tells her sort of the message that he leaves for her is that her only way out of this is to kill herself. so she hangs herself. And he walks into the office and then says something cryptic to the video camera there, and then turns around and leaves.
Oh.
But she only fake hanged herself.
Nope.
And so she leaves at the end of it too. So
she only fake hanged herself? Did I miss the ending?
Oh, you missed the last episode. Yeah, the ending is her. You see that she's actually rigged it so when she puts her head through the noose, she's attached her belt through the noose as well, which is, so she's sort of hanging from her pants.
Oh, okay.
So she fake hangs.
That's good, I guess.
And she says, she's like, you know, I'm terribly sorry to everybody I hurt, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, this island, living on this island has taught me one thing, has taught me how to survive.
Oh my God.
And then she gets down from, or she gets out of the noose, and that's the end of it.
Oh. Okay, well, first off, the episode, apparently they unleashed more and more of this as the weekend went on. Because on the first day I saw it, on the Friday, all that played was the videotape of what really happened in the crash, right? And then the second day I went, more played, because the second day I went, it showed her hanging herself, and it said that was the end. And apparently they had a third revision of it where she climbs back down like we're watching frigging Heathers.
yes, that's exactly what happened. She fake hangs herself to trick
John Wakefield,
Christian Slater into believing it.
We all saw Heathers, that's what happened, so, you know, we have to...
Yeah. So, and this is maybe a little bit too nitpicky, but in Harper's Island, when the cops arrive on the island, they declare the island deserted. Everybody's dead or gone.
Yeah.
Well, clearly they didn't do their job too well.
Although, to be fair, they did say...
Bob and Matthews has been dead. She's still on the island.
They did actually say that, except for a few locals, you two are the only survivors. Yeah, that's what the FBI is.
Very good at their job. Because just a few traces of blood in the church is enough to convince them that Henry and Anne...
Abby died. Despite the fact that when we see the burnt-out church, like, it doesn't seem like it burnt enough that bodies would have been completely destroyed by the fire.
You know? Exactly. It looks like the roof.
And that's pretty much it. I have another question for you. If he wasn't working with John Wakefield, why didn't John Wakefield kill Jimmy?
I guess because Henry and Wakefield had made sure to keep Jimmy alive to get Abby to do what they wanted, and then that they would have someone to pin the murders on.
But they didn't. But John Wakefield didn't know about Henry's plan to keep Abby alive and pin the murders on somebody.
I think he might have known about the plan to pin the murders on somebody.
Yeah, if he had...
I think that was the plan.
I hate to use Harper's Globe as an example. If he had planned...
They needed to manipulate Abby to do what they wanted, and they could only do that with Jimmy.
No, there was no plan to pin the murders on anybody, because, quite clearly, I mean, he wouldn't be showing his face to the harpersglobe.com if he was planning to pin the murders on somebody else. You know? Like, there was no...
Nobody watches Harper.
Hell, John Wakefield even tells him to kill Jimmy, and then he doesn't. Because Jimmy is part of Henry's plan not John Wakefield's plan. So the question is raised, well, why didn't John Wakefield kill him? Like, I understand why he didn't kill him the first time. It's preposterous, but I understand why he didn't kill him the first time in the hopes of getting her to come to the showdown with the dad, right? But the second time, when Jimmy's, you know, lying unconscious in the middle of the bar, I don't know why John Wakefield didn't kill him yet. Like, there's no reason.
I don't know. I don't, I've got.
His reason for killing him was that so Jimmy would be suspicious to everyone else. Like, that is his reason for not killing him. And I'm like, that's crap. You know, how to do that.
You just add to the list.
I know. There's an increasingly growing list of crap having to do with this show. Oh, my God.
But it's over.
It is over. It's done. Thank God.
We can put it behind us.
But I just want to point out that, first off, with Harper's Globe, like, this is how poorly put together that show was. They made us watch the same video twice. You know? Like, come on, guys. That's how little effort you're putting in?
She's a terribly unsympathetic character because here's a girl, she's running away from her past and trying to make a new start. But we find out over the course of the show that she's a drunk driver who crashed her car and believes she killed her best friend. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I don't feel
although,
sorry
to be fair, like,
you.
She didn't really crash the car.
She swerved to avoid hitting
somebody. She did. She was driving fine. The drunk guy next to her grabbed the wheel to try and make her hit John Wakefield, and she swerved away. So I think it's really the other guy's fault.
But she left the accident.
She did leave the scene of the accident.
She could have dragged her friend.
No, John Wakefield had already killed her friend. But yeah, she stumbled off.
No, her friend is still alive.
The biggest question I had about that whole sequence is, why was there a bear trap there? Because before John Wakefield sets the thing on fire, you see him pulling a closed bear trap away from the crash. And I'm like,
sure.
Why is that there? I don't know what that is. He didn't use it on anybody. Was he planning a bear trap themed attack on somebody that he ended up not doing? Because that's not what caused the car to crash.
Again, I have no answers for you. I wish that I did. Was there a bear trap in Harper's Island? I don't even remember.
No, there was no bear trap. There was one in the Friday the 13th movie. That's it.
Step near a bear
there
trap?
There were no bear traps. There was a character called the Trapster, and there was still no bear traps. Okay, I called that character the Trapster, but still. Tell me one thing about that character that makes him not the Trapster. He built...
I'm not having this conversation.
We do not have a Trapster-themed conversation.
Let's move on. Okay, let's put Harper's Island behind us.
It is the past. Harper's Island
is in the past.
Is mercifully ended.
And we'll talk about something else that is a little passé now, but again, making up for lost time here. And that would be Transformers 2.
I have refused to watch Transformers 2, so I would love to hear your thoughts
on it. I could have sworn that you had gone to see this
movie. I had Merman tell me, like, over the course of 2 hours, every single thing that happens in the movie. But I just couldn't put myself through that. Like, I don't hate myself that much.
Just getting back to the racism comment earlier, has to be among the more racist films I've seen. And begs the question whether Michael Bay has ever met a black person.
Oh, God.
Because, shit you not, there are two robots, or Transformers, called twins, who are stereotypical black dudes. And so stereotyped, in fact, that one of them has a small head, giant ears, and a gold tooth.
Wow.
they both speak in these, like, you know, terrible accents, and all they do is fight with one another and talk about how they're gonna bust a cap in each other's ass. And it is so offensive. And I'd like to, you know, maybe he's making a comment on stereotypes and racism in film. Maybe he's trying to raise awareness about certain issues. I don't know.
You might be giving the man too much credit.
All I can tell you is that as, you know, a white bread, white girl, I was horribly offended watching this. And that I paid money to see this.
I think your question that you asked that I immediately put out there to the public was, does watching Transformers 2 make you a racist, or do you have to have liked it?
Yes. Seriously, I kind of felt also not only a racist, but a pervert.
Really?
Because the women in that movie are so, I'm afraid they're only like two, but they are so over-sexualized.
I understand that
them.
The two women of the movie are Sexbot A, that would be Megan Fox, a robot designed to be sexy, and Sexbot B, a character who is actually a sexbot.
Yes, there is a character that is a sexbot, and then there's Megan Fox.
Who just serves all the purposes of a sexbot.
I'm a sex bot. I would have been more comfortable watching this film if they were, in fact, naked. I would have felt like less of a lecherous pervert.
Oh, my God. So had it come right out and been pornography, you would have felt less lecherous.
I would have been fine with that. Yes.
You know you're my hero, right? So what about their appearance, performance, whatever you want to call it in the movie, did you find so uncomfortable?
Well, just as I said, they're so overly sexualized. Like, every camera angle on Megan Fox, you know, either, like, accentuates her ass or her breasts. You know, it's just like, I mean, I've got an ass, I've got breasts, I'm a woman. I'm not attracted to other women, I'm a straight girl. But I don't, you know, I'm... will fully admit, like, the female body is quite beautiful to behold. But I don't need to see that much of it.
You know, every review I encounter...
And the movie is about giant fighting robots from space.
I gotta say, every review...
about hot, sexy women getting it on, then that's fine.
Make that movie.
But that's not the movie I went to go and see.
I want to point out that I saw every review I saw of this movie, first off, commented on the fact that there was a tiny Joe Pesci robot who was sexually attracted to Megan Fox. That's how hot she is, which made me very uncomfortable. But two, every single review I read described the sequence in which she is introduced in the film, which is apparently a ridiculous scene of her, like, just humping a motorcycle.
It's a motorcycle, yeah.
Oh, my God.
She's actually tattooing the motorcycle.
Seriously?
Well, okay, she's painting it, but it looks like she's giving it a tattoo.
Oh, my God. Why, Michael
Bay? There's nothing for her.
Yeah.
And having a chick tattoo a motorcycle. Yeah, it just she really doesn't serve any other purpose than as I.
Oh
can.
My God! So she does nothing in the movie.
She doesn't really do much of anything. And then there's this other character that is in fact a sex bot, actually, you know, a Terminator.
Merman's comment was
Transformers could in fact play the role of Terminators. Why weren't they all Terminators?
Merman's comment was, well, then why do they have giant robots at all? Because this would be 50 times more effective.
Because they have, you know, Terminator sex bot, and they have a robot that's actually a tiger.
What?
Yeah, there's like a tiger robot.
Oh my God.
It doesn't have like fur or anything, but it is the shape of a large wild cat.
Wow.
So, and while watching Transformers, you're actually seeing, like, five other movies. It is. It is appalling. Oh, the robots have balls.
Oh God.
They do. They all have. They've all got testicles. Uh-huh. And there is a line in which Don Turturro he's giving his location over the radio and says, and I quote, "I am directly beneath his scrotum." Thanks.
Oh my God. You know, the whole reason I won't watch the movie, Cars, is because I don't want to have to imagine cars having sex with each other.
You don't like anthropomorphized
cars? No, like, that makes me deeply uncomfortable, cars having sex with each other. I didn't like it there. I didn't like it in, what was that movie? Southland Tales. I just don't like the idea of cars getting it on with cars. Just, no, that's...
Well, the robots don't get it on with each other. There's that little robot that humps Megan Fox's leg. Okay.
No, I'm not saying they literally get it on with each other. I'm saying I don't want giant robots to be sexualized. No. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm going to go back to Merman's comment, which is, he's like, there's only one, you know, crane with a wrecking ball in Devastator, but it magically gets two wrecking balls so it can have testicles. And I'm like,
yes,
what
yes.
What is wrong with you, yes. Michael Bay?
So many questions.
Like, do they even have words?
So few answers.
Are the twisted, deviant things wrong with you?
Also, on top of, you know, our, overly sexualized portrayal of two female characters in this movie, and our stereotyped robots, we're also treated to a geography lesson.
What?
In that you can run from Petra, which is in Jordan, to the pyramids of Giza, which is in Egypt, in about 10 minutes.
They do know that there's, like, a river there, right?
A whole other country.
And a sea between them.
Apparently. Not anymore.
Oh, my.
Israel does not exist in Michael Bay's
world. There is
no
Suez Canal.
Axes.
Oh, my God.
They mention Sumer at one point for no other reason than, I think, just to say the word.
It's a good word.
It's a great word. That's brought up at one point, but when they say Sumer, I think they actually mean probably somewhere in Israel.
Oh, weird.
I'm not really sure why it's even brought up, because it's never talked about again. And just so it's that more than anything, okay, like, I'll deal with the offensiveness and the racism and all the rest of it, but, like, once you get something so wrong like that, like, forgetting that Israel separates Jordan from Egypt, that Egypt is, in fact, in Africa, which I don't think most people realize, you know?
Oh.
That's when the willing suspension of disbelief.
I don't think most people in North America are aware of any part of North Africa. Like, I think when they think Africa, they think either, like, the middle desert or the jungles or the southern desert. Like, I don't think they have any idea about, you know, Libya or, you know, Egypt or anything up there. Algeria? That's one of them. Anyway, the point is, like, basically, they're not aware of anywhere the French Foreign Legion operated, is what I would like to imagine.
It just, and then they have three pyramids, all with the cap. There's only one like that. and you know, the sort of beginning of time prologue, when spaceship crash landed on Earth in 17,000 BC. It crash landed in Egypt. It sort of sat there for millennia, for thousands of years.
Okay.
And then the Egyptians built the pyramids to conceal, like, this sort of the supernova machine. Because the whole point in this movie is that the Decepticons are looking for this machine that will blow up the sun and create Energon.
Okay.
And the machine is hidden. It's inside the pyramid.
Where else would it be, honestly?
Where else would it be, exactly? Meanwhile, there's back on Cybertron, there is this ancient robot or transformer called the Fallen, who used to be one of the original Transformers, I guess. They call themselves the Primes.
Okay.
And and Megatron is his disciple, and he wants to get vengeance upon Optimus Prime. I don't actually remember anymore because there's like too much story. And it gets a little convoluted at times, and you kind of sort of lose the thread of what exactly is going on. Basically, Decepticons want to blow up the sun, and Autobots have to stop them from doing it.
And for such a simple, basic plot, it's way too overcomplicated, is what you're saying?
That was fine. If that was it, then okay. Kind of makes you wonder why that wasn't addressed in the first movie, but whatever. Then you sort of have, you know, this ancient evil robot who's, you know, got it in for Optimus Prime, who dies at one point in this movie, so that was kind of interesting. And so you just kind of, you get a little confused about who's really in charge of the operation here and what the ultimate goal is and their end game. At one point, Shia LaBeouf is possessed of cosmic knowledge, which could have been really interesting, but that goes nowhere. He freaks out a little in class, and then that's about it. And now they find this other Transformer who used to be Decepticon and has switched sides. And he's also quite aged and wise, and they seek his help to decipher these symbols that Shia LaBeouf has in his brain. And he, you know, he came to Earth like long, long time ago, and he's, when they're learning about his presence on Earth, they're shown a photograph of like a Model T Ford or something like that. And when they go to, and like, you know, the Wright brothers plane, and when they go to the Air and Space Museum to find this Transformer, to wake him up and ask him, you know, their questions, he's disguised as a stealth bomber.
What?
Which means that he only went into stasis or whatever it is like 30 years ago. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's just, it's such
this
a mess.
This sounds so terrible.
Like, it really does, it looks fantastic, don't get me wrong.
Of course it looks fantastic.
It's a good looking movie. It's quite exciting. But there's
that's its job.
There's so much going on that it kind of detracts from robots from space fighting each other.
And it's way too long, right?
And it's really, it is.
It is like an hour too long.
Two and a half hours. Well, because there's all this, you know, there's this sort of unnecessary scenes of Shia LaBeouf and his family, or sort of him moving off to university and stuff like this. And so there's this interlude where they move him into university, and he meets his roommate, and his mom eats these pot brownies, and is, you know, high all of a sudden, and she's going around embarrassing him. I'm like, it's funny, but it doesn't belong in this movie. And there are a number of moments like that where it's these sort of comedic interludes that really have no place in this movie. Like, they just don't belong there.
Yeah.
And, like, some of them are legitimately funny, okay. But it's just, I don't understand.
So kind of like the three hackers from the first movie.
Yeah, kind of like
those characters who added nothing to the plot and were just there. So what's his name? The fat black guy whose name I can never remember, who was on the shield. Like, could just make funny fat guy jokes. and like, oh no, his grandma's dead. Oh no, he's working out of his grandma's house, and she's, you know, henpecking him, and oh god.
They had Andrew from Buffy.
Oh, really?
I love him. Yes.
And he was one of the nerds.
He was one of the hackers. He had like one line and was never seen or heard from again. But he's in it, and it was really exciting to
see. Oh, so do they have more nerds in this?
No, there
are
no
nerds. Okay, there are no nerds in this.
No. And just, just sort of the more you think about it, the more questions you have about the story. And I think they're going to rush into production for a third movie now because it made like.
It made all the money.
But really, like, it's just. It's not a good movie. It's exciting and it's fun to watch, but it is by no means a good movie. It's a good story.
So the word good could never. Yeah, the thing is, it's like. I remember. You know, what's his name? I'm blanking on Michael Bay's name. That's really embarrassing. Michael Bay's name, when he was talking about how it's like, I guess I've shown these critics a thing or two now that I've made the most successful movie of all time. And I'm like, are you being facetious? Or do you honestly not understand that there's a difference between making a good movie and making a movie people want to see?
Well, a lot of people don't think understand.
Oh, okay.
The difference between the two. Right.
So it's not just Michael Bay, then.
It's not just Michael Bay. Although, you know, he is guilty of that.
He seems to genuinely not understand the difference between those two completely opposite concepts. Like, marketing does not equal quality. Yeah. I would write that down as a mathematical formula if I thought he knew what that symbol meant.
But yeah, that's really all I have to say about Transformers.
I like that all you had to say about Transformers 2
my least eloquent
was 20 minutes of describing everything wrong with the film.
I know. Oh, apologies. I'm so sorry.
I know. Usually I'm the one who goes on forever complaining about things.
So let's talk about another movie now. Another movie which I have seen in
I would love to hear what this is.
Harry Potter and the Half-Blood
Prince. Now, don't go too spoilery, because I haven't read the book or seen the movie. And I've gone through... I know. I've gotten through. Well, we're not going to talk too much because we are running low on time, and I do have another topic. But I just want to point out that I've gone like a decade now without reading any of the books because I wanted to see the movies first. And
Why? Well,
because the movies are never as good as the books. So I always like to see movies before I read books that they're based on, just as a rule. Exactly. So I'm never disappointed. So I have a good experience at the movie and then a better experience at the book. And that's exactly, I finally got around to reading the first Harry Potter book. And yeah, and it was exactly like I planned. I passably enjoyed the movie and then I enjoyed the book much more. I thought the movie was a ridiculous anticlimax and the book is a little less of a ridiculous anticlimax.
Oh, be nice. Okay. I love Harry Potter.
We've had that discussion. You absolutely adore him.
Okay. So I'm always excited to see a Harry Potter movie. And the third book is my favorite of the books. And my third movie just happens to be my favorite.
I did enjoy that third movie. Gary Oldman and Helena Bonham Carter monkey. Oh, she's great.
And she's not in the third movie.
She's not? She didn't show up till the fourth one? Anyway,
she's a show till the fifth.
I wasn't really paying attention that close. I watched all the movies in a row.
You don't even know.
I watched all the movies in a row, and I was not playing that. Oh, right. It's just that they were both in Azkaban.
Oh my god!
You got to give me that one.
This is so not where I was going with my comment. What I was gonna say is that the third movie took the movies into newer, darker directions. And so all the movies after that have followed down that same dark path, which I think it does the book justice because the books go into they sort of head off into darker territory. Right. As the threats become more real and sort of worse and worse. And also the characters are aging too. So they can deal with heavier stuff. And in this movie now, and it's the sixth, and there's seven books in the series. So, well, there's going to be eight movies. So this movie, it still has the same sort of look and feel of the previous films, but there isn't really anything to distinguish this movie from the others. If you know what I mean. Because in the third movie, you had a whole change, like a big change was made to the series. Right. And then in the fourth movie, that's when they brought back Voldemort.
Yes.
And then in movie number five, you're introduced to more dark wizards, and Sirius Black dies. And, you know, you sort of have this exciting climatic battle scene. And in this movie, there isn't really anything that stands out. Well, apart from something that happens towards the end, but even that's a story element. There's nothing particular to the film itself that makes it any different from the others. So you sort of feel like everyone's just sort of going through the motions.
They're spinning their wheels, getting ready for the big finale.
Yeah, a little like that. And it had a lot of potential that I felt just wasn't realized. And I wish I could talk more about this, but I don't want to ruin it.
Well, we will after I've seen the film. But it's not like this film is going to have a long life. It's going to be in theaters for a while. It's going to be big on video.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I mean, I enjoyed it. It's a good movie. And it made me cry. That's not saying much because I'm a
big fan. You cry a lot at movies.
I cry at every, sure. Yeah. Just, you know.
I mean, for me.
Get
like,
the violin going and it just.
Literally the only thing I'll cry at is WALL-E. But in my defense, I will literally.
I refuse to see WALL-E.
Cry for the entire film WALL-E.
I refuse. I will not watch that.
It's too sad. It's.
I just have a problem with anthropomorphized
robots.
Did it. Funny, because I
watched it. You see, those robots were in no way sexualized. I just want to point out. Not at all. So I'm not a hypocrite.
But I urge you to go and see Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
So this is a full-on AVOD many-star recommendation.
Well, endorsement. Let's go with that. But again, like I just sort of felt like the movie could have gone to interesting places.
That it steadfastly refused to.
Had a lot of potential, but just it didn't get there. It wasn't realized, and so I felt it was kind of.
Oh, well, I'm very sad to.
Yeah, but still, you know. But okay. To end this on a happy note. Alan Rickman has a larger role in this movie, and he's sort of, you know, just been on the sidelines in the past few movies, didn't really have a lot to do his character. But Snape is all over this movie, and holy crap.
Well, it's about time.
He steals the show, because, I mean, Alan Rickman's a great actor. I mean, he's fantastic in everything he does. But he was, like, born to play this
movie. See, that makes me happy.
I think. He is so good.
I have been, honestly, I have been waiting for, like, five movies for him to do something.
He does a lot of something in this one, and he's just fantastic. He steals every scene that he's in. Basically, like, he makes the movie for me.
Yay. Okay, now I'm really
excited. I'm really excited now for Seven, because he's got
a lot to do there, too.
Like, quite an important role in that.
Yay! Oh, way to go, Rickman.
So for nothing else, see the movie just because Alan Rickman he quite literally will leave you spellbound.
Wow. He is just all kind of badass in this movie.
Oh my god, yeah.
So much badass.
So there you go. My non-spoiler review of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood.
Okay. I saw a couple I was going to discuss a couple of movies I'd seen, but now we're running out of time, so I'm just going to address the weird thing about them rather than getting into the plots. Just, I completely ran, as you know, I like to watch movies without reading the descriptions, or even, I try to avoid looking at the boxes. I just...
Let's make it awfully difficult.
Oh, it does. Sometimes. In fact, I have a couple of upcoming movies where I rented the wrong movie because I asked...
You weren't paying
attention. No, because I asked people to rent a movie with a name and I got another movie with the same name by accident.
Oh my God. See, for me, like, the box will cause me not to rent a
That's
movie.
That's fair.
It could have the greatest title and the most fantastic box art ever.
Yeah.
But if what I read on the back is shit, I'm not going to rent that movie.
Man, wait until you hear about some of the movies that I have seen lately because I did not know what they were. But anyway, the point I was getting at, and took me a while, but the point I'm getting at is that I rented two movies recently knowing literally nothing about them. And completely at random, this is going to sound odd, both of them starred Thomas Dekker, young John Connor from the Sarah Connor Chronicles. It's like,
that's weird.
It was so completely random. And one of them, he was like the main character. And had I checked the cast list on the back of the box, I would have seen that, or like the second lead. But then the other one, literally, it's this entire movie spent running away from a serial killer. And then in the last 5 minutes, a couple of people like drive up in a car to help save the day. And one of them is him. And I'm like,
that's so weird when that happened to me the other day. I ended up watching like 3 Cameron Bright movies in a row.
What is he doing?
Through no fault of my own. I'm like, I haven't seen Ultraviolet. Let's watch that. And then I'm like, I still, you know, it was okay. But, you know, I still kind of want to watch another movie. Let's watch Running Scared. I was like,
what is he doing in all these movies?
I'm just like, wow, I just had myself a little Cameron Bright film fest.
Although, to be fair, he is very entertaining.
He's good. He's a good, yeah,
yeah.
He's a good actor.
He's, yes. I'm not gonna...
That's so bad.
No, no, but
that's
what's
hilarious.
Even weirder is that the second one, Laid to Rest, the slasher movie, at the beginning, Sarah Connor from the Sarah Connor Chronicles is in it.
Oh.
And I'm like, did they do this on hiatus? Was, like, he doing a movie and phoned her up and it's like, hey, do you want to be in this movie for 2 minutes? Because that's what she's in the movie.
Maybe.
Yeah, it was very weird. But yeah, no, I enjoyed the heck out of those movies. So if you're looking for a movie that, well, no, that's not true. I enjoyed the heck out of Laid to Rest. The other one was one of the past year's 8 films to die for, and it was called From Within, and it was really muddled and bad and just questionable for all kinds of reasons that I would have gone into had we not talked for so long about Terminator 2. We can say...
We didn't talk at all about
Terminator
2.
Oh, God, I keep calling it that because I wrote in my show notes that we were going to talk about T2.
Although, I mean, Transformers 2 did have Terminator...
Well, it had a Terminator in it.
Because it did, in fact, have a Terminator.
Yeah, but I mean, like... And of course, the most famous thing about that, the whole college sequence that they've talked about in every review is that Michael Bay's way of casting extras is he phones up modeling agencies and it's like, I need 50 underwear models.
That's exactly right. It's like this college recruits based on, you know, what you look like and not,
which raises the question,
you're great.
How did Shia LaBeouf get in?
Oh,
I'm just being mean.
But just, yeah, like, everyone at that university is gorgeous. Yeah. And then, sort of, one last complaint in before the show is finished for today, for the week, right? He's sitting in class, Astronomy 101.
Oh, nice.
And the professor is carrying on about how brilliant he is. And, like, the whole front row is filled with girls who are all staring at him adoringly.
Like in Indiana Jones.
Like, exactly like Indiana Jones. He takes a bite out of an apple, drops it, and then kicks it to, you know, one of the girls in the front
Ew.
Row. She catches it, says,
"Ew."
And he mouths to her, "Finish it for me." And I just, like, needed to take a shower after that. Like, it just...
Yet another one of those scenes where you would have been more comfortable were you watching actual pornography.
Exactly. It's like, so once again, in addition to has Michael Bay ever met a black person, has Michael Bay ever actually been to university?
Well, I think we can guarantee that he hasn't.
Granted, you know, teachers and students have sex with one another, but they don't carry on like that in front of the whole class.
Oh my God. Yeah, there's none of this movie that sounds good to me.
I have nothing
else to say. Oh my God. Yeah. All right. Well, as usual, we're going to thank you for watching and meet here next week because we're back on our regular schedule after the harrowing events of the ending of Harper's Island that caused us to take a week off. Apparently I'm blaming that now. Look forward to look forward to our upcoming coverage of the rest of the summer's blockbusters, which I will likely not see, but enjoy hearing the Dive Mistress talk about. And that does mean you have to see them. Was that not clear?
I am not paying money.
Okay, G-Force. Well, we're going to skip G-Force, but I'm sure we'll find other stuff to watch. And look for many upcoming features here on the AVOD, none of which I'm going to plug now because apparently that's bad luck. But we have stuff coming up, and it's not just our plan to watch every single Saw movie in October and to play the Saw video game. Although that should be fun. That's right, there's a Saw video game, so look out, be prepared for us to review the Saw video game.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just saw the trailer for it, and I was so fascinated by how terrible it looks. I've just been telling everybody about the upcoming Saw video game. All right, enough of that. Thanks for watching, and I just want to say, if you'd like to hear more from Count Vargelon, you can do it at vargelon.com.
You can read all my incoherent ramblings at vanborgs.com.
And here's how incoherent her ramblings are. She wrote an entire review of Never Cry Werewolf without once mentioning that it was a complete remake of Fright Night.
I figured everybody else had gone off in that direction. And I preferred to comment on the
other terrible,
poorly realized. Yeah, the other terrible things.
It's a pretty important
that
collection.
You can read at zombot.blogspot.com. Yes. you can always reach the AVOD at the avod.blogspot.com. You can send us an email at the avod@gmail.com. yes, I've run out of things to say. So thank you from the Dive Mistress.
And from Count Vargelon, have yourselves a great evening.